saving money on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Menards has a huge selection of concrete and mortar mixes. Our concrete products are great for a variety of applications, including pouring a walkway, setting a post, or even installing stone veneer. View our entire selection of concrete mixes and supplies in-store and on Menards.com. Plus, check out the weekly flyer for more great deals happening this week. Save big money at
Menards. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. This is episode number 296. Very, very excited to talk to my guest again today. I won't keep you guys too long in this section of the show, so make sure you head on the links below where you can find my guest, what he's got going on. All the links where you can find me, everything I got going on, Tiger Fitness through my link below, drinkelementtea.com/libertyandhealth, and Fox Sons Coffee, use code Kyle at checkout. This gentleman had walked so us libertarians and non-interventionists could run. And I've been saying that a lot to people, and I don't think people get it because people have given them crap, but we're going to set the record straight today. So without further ado, let's rock and roll.
What is up, everybody? My name is Kyle Matovic. I am the host of the In Liberty and Health podcast, where we talk all things liberty, health and wellness, and beyond. My hope is to encourage and spread the message of liberty, physical and mental well-being. I hope you enjoy all the topics we talk about with our guests. We're on all major streaming platforms, so please sit back, relax, and enjoy.
Man, I'm doing as good as anyone can do getting buried by his 13-year-old son on leg day.
I'm not going to apologize for not being on this podcast because I got to go see Metallica. So if that's a problem, kiss my ass. Okay?
I am. All right.
And Dan McAdams, welcome back.
Hey, Kyle, thanks for having me back on your show.
Yeah, of course. Well, as I said in the introduction, I truly do believe that you walked so a lot of the non-interventionist libertarians could run today. The topics I want to talk about today are widely debated amongst people in our circles, but they shouldn't be. So I guess first things first, because I know you're on a little bit of a time crunch. Everything that's going on down in Haiti, I'm sure you saw when the news broke of the gentleman that they call Barbecue. And the story was that he was an alleged cannibal. What were your thoughts on that?
Are you still there?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, sorry.
That's okay. Can you hear me?
Yeah, no, that's what. Yeah. My immediate thoughts were this, the whole thing is BS, because that's my default, you know? I mean, it has all of the, and I'll start by saying I'm not an expert on Haiti in any stretch of the imagination. But my default, whenever you want to have a bad guy come along, is that it's BS. You know, we heard it with Saddam Hussein. We heard it with Gaddafi. I don't know about this fellow, Cherizier, his name is, I think. Apparently got his name because he worked at a barbecue with his mom, barbecue place. Down here in Texas, he'd probably be elected governor with that name, right, immediately. But so I know people that I respect think that he's a decent guy. I don't know. It's not for me to judge. The only thing that I know is that we absolutely have no role whatsoever in Haiti, and anyone who claims that we do has malevolence in their heart, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that was kind of my initial reaction when I saw all of the people who I thought should have had a little bit better like takes and reactions to it, pumping out the, oh my God, cannibalism is going wild down in Haiti. You know, it's something that I think you're very, very right to point out. And I was listening to your speech earlier today, sharing it with some of our mutual friends from Libertarian Institute and antiwar.com about how not to be a CIA propagandist. Yeah. And I think kind of always looking at that as like the North Star principle of the way that we should talk about these issues really helps you kind of guide your way through a lot of these situations that you see coming out, which just are absolute obvious propaganda pieces.
Yeah. I mean, I'm the last person to be screaming racism, but I think there is an element of that. You know, when you talk about Haiti, there are a bunch of cannibals, you know, it sort of stokes all the worst fears in a lot of Americans. We got to do something. And now, I mean, the latest thing, I've just, in preparation for our discussion, I've just seen what's the latest things happening. Oh, there's 1,000 Americans stuck there, or, you know, what are we going to do? There's some neocon congressman from Florida who was like an army ranger or whatever. He's flying planes down there, getting people out. They're trying to gin up the sense of urgency, because it's always about urgency. you never can take some time and think things over. You know, and we may get into it later, but remember when they had to ban TikTok last week, it was urgent. You know, we don't have to worry about passing our funding bills. We don't have to fund government and do what we're actually elected to do. No, there's an urgency. There's a crisis. We got to act. We got to give $100 billion to Ukraine now. We can't wait. Yeah. You know, Senator Paul says, well, can we at least have an inspector general? No, shut up. Give them the money. So, you know, you can feel the fever pitch now that's going on with Haiti. We've intervened in Haiti for so many times. Hillary Clinton is probably personally responsible for a lot of the crap that goes on down there now, because she was involved in a lot of nefarious activities with the Clinton Foundation. We occupied Haiti for, I don't know, several decades in the early 20th century, what have you. I mean, we've done enough to it. America's done enough to it. But still, you can hear it. You can hear the pattern going over and over again. Like you say, you know, they're eating each other. They're, you know, Americans are stuck there. What are we going to do? So, you know, there you have it.
Yeah, well, I'm kind of glad you brought up the TikTok bill, because, you know, Senator Rand Paul, I think, is being one of the very, very few heroes in this situation. And I had somebody come at me and say, oh, well, why are you always defending TikTok? I said, I'm not defending TikTok. This is about, you know, the Cold War that we're gearing up for against China. And for some reason, specifically right-wingers especially, just cannot look beyond their own nose on this issue. Literally, as soon as you say anything about China, their eyes gloss over, and it's like full-on neocon mode. They can't think objectively anymore. They can't see the, you know, just 5 feet right in front of them and realize, like, hey, this is going to be used against you next.
Yeah, it's just insane. I mean, what is it about China that they're so worked up over? Well, they don't allow free expression. That's why we have to ban this website. You know, I mean, that's a joke. I mean, seriously, is that what it is? You know, I mean, I had never looked at TikTok before. I'm a little bit too old for that, to be honest. But I went on it for the first time just to see what it was all about. And it's pretty weird and goofy. You know, I'm sure there are dark corners and I don't know anything about it. But you're right, this impulse that we've got to, you know, oh my gosh, the Chinese might be spying on us. We're only allowed to have the NSA spying on us. You know? And it's just this absurd thing, like some 14-year-old making stupid dance videos. Like, do they really think the Chinese government has a whole, you know, office dedicated to, let's get some information on this person. You know, let's violate their precious bodily fluids, you know, with our Chinese communist talk. It's just so absurd if you stop and think about it.
Yeah, well, I'm glad that you and the great doctor pointed out, both the great doctors, I should say, because this is kind of the big push. I know that, you know, Victoria Nuland's now out of the White House. And it is kind of funny because I remember some people were saying, oh, well, now that Victoria Nuland's out, they're going to start winding down Ukraine. And I don't necessarily think that's true, but it was kind of convenient that as soon as the, you know, most well-known Ukraine-focused neocons is out of the White House, they immediately pivoted over to TikTok, like within, you know, just a couple days. But once again, this goes back to this whole propaganda piece about China being, you know, oh, well, we got to fight a war with China. And I'm kind of curious your thoughts of this idea that some people put forth, and I don't know exactly where I fall on it, but Tucker Carlson kind of being friendly with Putin and cozying up to Putin under the perspective that, like, we want Russia to be on our side in the war with China. I'm not sure if I necessarily buy this, but I'm kind of curious your thoughts, because Tucker's put out a lot of the, he's seen a lot of the narrative about the anti-China propaganda.
Yeah. The one thing I do like about Tucker is that he's shown a willingness to change. He's shown a willingness to adapt his views, you know, and so I think that puts him miles ahead of the average neocon who is so completely frozen into their perspectives. Sure. But there certainly are a lot of right wingers who are like, hey, we cannot get involved in Ukraine. We've got to fight China, you know, and the answer to that is, you know, I mean, we did a segment on our show, I think this week sometime, that a new study came out from the General Accountability Office showing actual combat readiness for the F-35 in the U.S. Marine Corps is 15%. 15% of the planes that we paid for, that you and I are working hard to pay for, only 15% are combat ready. Now, they cover that up by calling them mission ready. Now, mission ready is a different category, and we talked about it on the show. Mission ready means they can just do kind of anything, like they can deliver a pizza. You know, they can do all this stuff, but actual combat ready, let's have a dogfight, let's do some strafing, whatever they do, only 15%, and overall about 30%. And this is a project that goes back to the 1990s when they started developing the F-35s. And it's trillions of dollars have been spent. And it's like, you know, $300 billion over budget. So, you know, the next time you think that, like, let's go fight China, we lost in Afghanistan after 20 years, you know? So maybe think twice about these things.
Yeah, it's also kind of crazy because Lyle Goldstein, someone I'm sure you're familiar with, had kind of, he's responsible for running a lot of like these war simulations. And basically every single time we lose thousands of Americans as soon as we get over there. And, you know, what the hell are we going to do? They're 8,000 miles away to go defend Taiwan and Taiwan, you know, Taiwanese sovereignty. Like if they want sovereignty, they can have it, but like that's got to be their fight. That's not our fight.
Yeah.
So this kind of pivoted over to something else I wanted to talk to you about because people are going nuts about Cuba because somebody that I want to get into it a little bit with you as well, Javier Milei, a video had came out of him saying, I want the people to overthrow the Cuban government. And then all the libertarians are sounding off, oh, yeah, yeah, we need regime change in Cuba. Yeah, and I'm kind of like, you guys can't. It's the same deal as like these right-wingers in China. Like you don't see how this is going to be used as moral ammunition to support a, you know, ground troop, you know, sanctions and all just the worst stuff in the world. When you say, yeah, we should have regime change in Cuba. Like you don't, nobody could seem to parse this out, but you had always pointed to, I think it was what, the Lou Rockwell rule where you never do the bidding of the CIA.
Yeah. I mean, it's always done in the name of the people, you know, and to hear the libertarians literally mimicking the voice of a Victoria Nuland, or even worse, like a Samantha Power. You know, she spent her whole year as a humanitarian, and the, you know, the trail of blood and bodies left behind in her wake, you know, is something to behold. It's always for the people. And I saw there was a thread on Twitter X where was it Patrick McFarlane? It seems like a really, really smart, really decent guy. He went and took some incoming fire, because he posted. And he posted a great thing written by my old friend, Jeff Deist. And I had read it initially when it came out at Mises, but I reread it when Patrick posted it again, and it was so great. I mean, I was so jealous because I wish I had written it. And he did it a few years ago, but it's exactly like the point of libertarianism is not to tell – it's not a universalist philosophy. That's where it differs, you know, from conservatism, you know, neoconism, globalism, liberal. It doesn't purport to be like a universalist philosophy. It's basically the philosophy of leave everyone alone to do their own thing. And if the people in Cuba want to overthrow their government, well, you know, good luck. You know, maybe it'll turn out good. Maybe it'll turn out well. But here's a guarantee. If the U.S. is involved in overthrowing your government, you will end up for the worse. There's no question about it whatsoever. Even just cheerleading on the sidelines, they're always going to pick the worst people.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny because a lot of these people are like Javier Milei loyalists where this guy can do no wrong. And I understand the appeal because he comes out, he has a lot of zeal and he's a self-described libertarian, but you know, you, much to your credit, have remained skeptical of him the entire time. And you've taken a lot of slings and arrows for it. And I commend you for it. And I agree with you because it's like when he's carrying a lot of the same foreign policy perspectives as the US government, and he's, you know, crutching onto his Ukraine lapel and waving the Israeli flag, we should have a little bit of pause before we go throwing all of our weight and, you know, moral support behind this guy. So, I'm kind of curious, like where you kind of learned about Milei and how your thoughts on him evolved over time.
I mean, it was sort of like with our good friend Barbecue, you know, all of a sudden there's a buzz going on. I'm like, what is this all about? I smell something funny. You know, my antenna are going up, and you know, that there is a pattern of the, for lack of a better word, like the propaganda forces, the special services, you know, whatever you want to call them, they do like to employ and to appeal to libertarians. They love to be able to say, see, even the libertarians agree with us that this is, you know, I'm all for, you know, non-interventionism, but, you know, and so they love to say that. So, I mean, I don't know much about the guy. I don't know where he came from. I hope he's successful. I hope he demonstrates it. But what really freaked me out is to see these libertarians acting like, what's the word? Like, you know, like teenage girls in love with the film idol or something. You know, it was just bizarre and weird and creepy. And then you look at his foreign policy as he articulated it, and you're right, it was completely in line with U.S. foreign policy. And so if you do that, if you do the calculus on that, and then you look at what the U.S. policy for Latin America, for Central and South America is, well, definitely one of them is to counter BRICS, because the U.S. is they've lost control of the dollar hegemony because they've overused sanctions. They shot their wad on Russia. It didn't work. On the contrary, it failed so spectacularly because Russia is doing much better with our sanctions, because it forced them to find new allies elsewhere and to expand their trade, not to go isolationist. So the whole thing is a huge danger. You have an expanding BRICS, which I'm sure the neocons in DC see as a real danger to U.S. hegemony. So if you can get a little outpost out there of a guy who says, no way, BRICS, we don't want anything to do with it. I heart Israel, I heart Ukraine, I hate China. Castro, you know, we should tell him on his grave. I mean, your antenna has to go up, you know. I mean, and also he's kind of a Zelensky character, isn't he? He's running around with a chainsaw, whatever. I mean, that happens. You need some populism in campaigns. And it's successful. I mean, I like Pat Buchanan. I like Ron Paul when he runs. He's got that populist streak. But there is some kind of buffoonery about him, some kind of a weirdness about him that makes me feel very skeptical.
Yeah, it's also kind of weird because Chaya Raichik, the known Israeli propagandist from Libs of TikTok, has him as her profile header. And you know, I always kind of have to ask the question of why is it that somebody that's essentially more, I would, you know, you could really debate that she's probably more loyal to Israel than she is the United States. Shouldn't we question a foreign country that's kind of, you know, putting out these pieces? And like, yeah, there's legitimately crazy people that she's showing, and it's kind of right. Like, we should notice this stuff and call it out as ridiculousness. But like, her focus strictly on that as a foreign actor, it's very, very strange to me. And you brought up Pat McFarlane earlier, who's a very, very good friend of mine. He wrote this beautiful article called "The Anti-Woke to Zionist Pipeline."
And it's a great article.
It's
exactly one of the ones that I wish that I had written, because he totally nails what I had been thinking. You know, this is people like her in a panic because, okay, I mean, we want to talk about TikTok. You know, you remember Greenblatt, the guy from ADL, said, you know, was intercepted call, said, we've got a TikTok problem. The young people aren't buying our crap about Israel anymore. They're starting to look at a very broad and more nuanced way about what's happening in the Middle East. We got to do something about it. Lo and behold, a couple weeks later, we banned TikTok, you know? And so I think what is happening with people like her and other Shapiro, all of these people, what they are desperately trying to do is hang on to the right wing, and especially the young right wing. And so what they are doing, and Patrick did a great job, and I actually wish you would expand it, because it's one of those articles where you want to read more. But what they have done now is they have conflated anti-wokeism, which everyone's sick of this crap anyway. Right. We all know it. We're sick of it. Right. Conflate anti-wokeism with pro-Israel, which in one way it's bizarre, because Israel is the most pro-gay country probably on earth. Very, 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 very in your face. But to conflate those two, so like, oh yeah, you hate woke? Yeah, you're damn right I do. Well, you got to love Israel. Oh, okay, all right. And so, I mean, you can see it over and over. She's big on it. All the Daily Wire people, with one exception, are in on it. All of these right-wing, Breitbart, all of them are like this. And it's just really shocking to see. But I guess, you know, at the end of the day, you just have to follow the money.
Yeah, it's interesting. Conrail sent in a super chat. I appreciate that, friend. The pro-Malay crowd are bringing out the Trotskyism and libertarians. And yeah, like, that's kind of a point that, like I said, you've really nailed is that like people can't seem to understand when they're carrying water for the worst people in the world. So, you know, when you're saying, hey, we need to ban TikTok. Okay, well, once again, this is because we want to stick it in China's face. Or, you know, you go on about the alleged organ harvesting or Uyghur genocide, which, you know, has been essentially debunked now, that goes to Kiev, or, you know, talking about how bad a guy Putin is. And I had people arguing with me, and I made the point, I thought it was clear, but like leading up to the Iraq war, you would not be saying, oh my God, Saddam's such a dictator, he's such a horrible guy, but you know, we should probably like leave that country alone. You would say, no, we should fight this war. But for some reason, like people on our side just can't seem to figure that out, that they're literally giving all the ammunition to the State Department. And it's like, okay, well, what's your case for not invading? You know, how can you say, eventually your moral support does become financial support because the worst people are going to take it that way.
Yeah. You're laying the groundwork. You're doing the work for them, you know? And when I started questioning Malay's foreign policy at first, just saying, well, you know, Argentina is not like an international powerhouse. What does it matter that his foreign policy is this way? You know, and you're missing the point. The point is now there is an airstrip. There's airstrip one down in Argentina where this foreign policy is going to be embraced. You know, I mean, you're endorsing it. So, you know, it's a terrible tendency among libertarians. They want to, I don't know, maybe they want to feel like they're in the club, you know, oh, that Putin, he's an absolute monster. But hey, I don't want to intervene. You know, so that's the Rockwell rule. Don't ever demonize someone the CIA wants you to demonize. Now, I use the term CIA loosely, and a very good friend of mine, Phil Giraldi, I had a career in the CIA, and he cautions me a bit against being so cavalier with the term. But unfortunately, for lack of a better word, deep state you could use or what have you. But the bad guys, the neocons, never demonize the people that the neocons want demonized. And that's why, you know, I'm not going to necessarily have an I Heart Putin t-shirt on. But, you know, why should I care? You know, why should I care? Why should any of us care?
Right. Yeah, I completely agree. I saw that you had the, what was it? The Assad shirt on. And there was one other one. I can't remember which one it was. But, you know, what we hear all back in, you know, early Trump's presidency, Assad must go, you know, regime change in Syria, which, you know, thankfully, Trump, to his credit, didn't go all in on regime change. But I mean, he still did more drone strikes than Obama did in 4 years in, you know, than Obama's 8 years and killed more civilians. So it's not like he was any kind of dove, but, you know, still, you know, he didn't launch a regime change war like a lot of people wanted them to. And I want to read this real quick from our mutual friend Mike Jackman. Mick Based is the best.
He's cool.
Yeah.
I like so, Mike.
Yeah, the Jackmans are great guys. But you know, they've been very, very good about the anti-intervention stuff too. So one other thing I also want to talk to you about was RFK, because both you and I had taken some slings and arrows for going to bat for RFK. And then ever since October 7th, I think a lot of the fervor behind him has kind of faded away, or ever since he got called an anti-Semite once.
Yeah. I mean, I was on the Kim Iverson show a while ago. And I was like ready to, I mean, I haven't voted probably since before you were born, Kyle, but I was ready to register. I mean, I was ready to vote for RFK because I loved what he was saying. We talked about him on the show all the time. Yeah. And then he just had this freak out. And it's not like Israel's my number one topic, you know, but if you are so bad on that issue and you're so tone deaf, and this is before October 7th, right. If you're so tone deaf on that issue, especially after the aftermath of October 7th, so give it a month maybe and see what really is happening, and you still haven't been able to nuance your message at all, in fact, you double down, then it shows that there's something deeper that's wrong with you. There's a deeper flaw that's not just about this one country. So, you know, I don't want to have anything to do with him, to be honest with you, because I don't trust him. Anyone who's that terrible, and I said it from the beginning when he started doing this, I said, he doesn't have to be doing this. It's not necessary. I said, you know, he could take the Ron Paul position on Israel. You know, Israel's fine. We should trade with them. We should treat them like every other country, you know. And he could have even gone a little further. Sure, I'm pro-Israel. But, you know, I'm a different kind of candidate. I'm a pro-peace candidate. And what we've been doing doesn't work. So I'm going to try to find a way to bring these people together and solve some of these problems. You know, we as non-interventionists may not love that, but it certainly sounds a lot better than the Palestinians are the most spoiled people on earth. I mean, that is just sick.
Yeah, well, one point that I heard Dave Smith bring up, and I think he was absolutely right about this, just imagine the Kennedy campaign, because I remember when he came out and said that, like, China is an economic competitor, and he's very, very well informed about the Ukraine war as well. But imagine if, you know, he would have came out and said, you know what, no, we can no longer support Israel for what they're doing to the Palestinians. I support the state of Israel. I support Jews worldwide, whatever you want to say, but no more funding, and let's focus on a peace deal between these two people. I mean, he would steal all of Biden's more radical supporters. And like, there's this weird faux thing where, you know, the right is saying, oh my God, is Joe Biden's leaving Israel behind, when he's, you know, been a Zionist to his core from the very beginning. But just, it's so sad to think about the counterfactual that Kennedy could really be a force to be reckoned with, but he threw that all away because someone called him anti-Semite once, and then, you know, he's just so loyal to Israel.
Yeah, and I mean, people speculate that they have something on him, Epstein and all that. I don't know. I have no idea. I have no idea. I just know that it sticks out like a sore thumb. And when you see something like that, it's just bizarre. It's bizarre. I mean, you know, he could easily say, you know, sometimes when you're a good friend to somebody, you have to be able to say no. You know, I mean, you're a good friend with your buddy in a bar, and he's going to get that, you know, one more drink. No, you have to be able to say, hey, that you've had enough, my friend, you've had enough. And, you know, that's what, I mean, you're being a friend to Israel. I mean, Israel's in a tough neighborhood, and the moral hazard in economic terms, the moral hazard of assuming that the U.S. always has your back financially, but also militarily, causes you to take risks that are not necessarily wise risks. And so Israel, for all the people who claim to love Israel, Israel may end up in a much worse situation when this is all over. Things are getting bad for Israel. The rest of the world can't stand Israel. They're sick of Israel. The entire Muslim world, a good chunk of the Western world is sick of it. And they are basically you know, launching themselves into their own oblivion. So giving them more, giving the diabetic more sugar, is not helping him out, even if it makes him feel good. The heroin addict giving him another fix is not helping him out, even if it temporarily makes him feel good. So I would argue, you probably, if you want to be a friend of Israel, you'd be a heck of a lot better a friend of Israel to tell him you guys need to chill out.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's kind of interesting because, like, in theory, we're so concerned about China's economic force all over the world. But like, why can't we be that, you know, scary country that's trading with other countries? And like, I'm not saying they're the world's best actors, but like, Jesus Christ, we have way more blood on our hands than China does. So who are we to tell them how to act? Like, why can't we be the ones that are, you know, doing good business with different countries, having free trade and raising everybody's living standards? But instead, we want to go fight a war all over the world. And we wonder why, you know, BRICS is gaining, you know, momentum, whereas the US dollar is falling away.
I mean, one of the things I really dug when I was in China is just how entrepreneurial the place is, you know, and I'm sure, yeah, it's a government is whatever. But, you know, I was in Shanghai one evening, and you walk down like one of these main streets, and everyone has, it's sort of like an English basement where it's half above ground and half underground. You know, all of these people have turned their English basement into little mini restaurants. You know, so like, come on down, you know, we've got some rice, you know, come on down, and we've got some noodles, you know, and everyone is so entrepreneurial. You go to a flea market, I got some great shirts and stuff, and they're haggling with you. They want to do business. They're drawing you in. They're doing all sorts of things. We've lost that spirit. I mean, can you imagine if you had like a little restaurant in your house? You'd have like the local officials, the state officials, the feds. They do a Waco on you, right? You're serving Twinkies. You know, it's just insane. So for all the probably bad stuff there is in China, they have this great entrepreneurial spirit that we have really completely lost because of the state and the way the state treats us.
Yeah, I mean, I almost hesitate to say that, like, you know, America's more capitalist than China. I mean, at this point, it really seems like they're more free than the U.S. Like, they have a better culture. Their people over there are much more optimistic about the way their society and their government's going. And once again, I'm not sitting here saying communism's great, but I mean, like, to say that they still have, you know, 21st century or 20th century communism, it just doesn't seem true anymore because they're trading all over the world and they took a note from our book and now they're beating us at our own game. Well, you know, like Kennedy said this at one point, let's beat them at that game. Let's trade with them. They're an economic competitor and let's win that competition. Like, for me, I can't support a presidential candidate unless they're going to say, we're going to end the American empire. No war with China, no war with Russia, no war with Iran. We're going to bring everybody home and let's just be a prosperous fucking country. But that's too much to ask for. Everybody's Israel first, you know, Ukraine, Taiwan, all these countries have to be first before America first.
Yeah. And, you know, we have our own domestic problems too with the actual wokeism and with, you know, trying to cut off the private parts of kids. We've just sort of gone nuts, I think, as a country. So we've just lost that. I don't know. I mean, that's why this should be a great moment for libertarians. In China, they have theoretically less political freedom. They have more economic freedom than we do. You just don't badmouth the party, the Communist Party. Is that a trade off for being able to have a noodle shop in your basement? Maybe it is. I don't know. You know, it's not the worst thing in the world. I mean, like, we have it so much better here. We have a socialist government. We have a communist government. We have a government that's inventing money out of thin air and destroying our livelihoods. You know, so I always just think, you know, look at what's going on at home. We should emulate some of the good aspects of them instead of emulating the bad parts of China, which is, you know, restrictions on speech, restrictions on, the DEI stuff and all that. You know, I mean, all this stuff that apparently they have. Maybe they don't even have it. Maybe they're just lying to us. I don't know.
Yeah, and I tend to believe that. One interesting article that our mutual friend Dave DeCamp had put out was about the CIA campaign that Trump launched in 2019 specifically to propagandize against China. So, you know, it's kind of hard to separate fact from fiction on a lot of this stuff, but I think the our Rockwell serves us well in this respect, because like you said, don't demonize the countries that your country is looking, or that your intelligence agencies are looking to regime change or fight a war with.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes you just have to troll them by wearing Assad shirts.
All right. Well, Dan, I know you're on a little bit of a time crunch, and I don't want to keep you too much longer. I really appreciate everything you do. Let everybody know where they can find you sporting your Assad shirt and all that good stuff.
Well, my Twitter can be where I take my id out for a walk. So it can be a little spicy if you're not up for it. I'll be honest with you. But Ron Paul Institute is ronpaulinstitute.org. If you go on there, subscribe to free updates. We obviously will never sell any information about you. We are cool about that. Ron Paul Liberty Report, Monday through Thursday, is with me and Dr. Paul, and we do foreign policy and civil liberties mostly. And on Friday is my good friend Chris Rossini and Dr. Paul, and they're talking about the Fed and all the economic stuff. So we'd love to have all of your viewers watching our show and subscribing to our channels.
Absolutely, and I'm sure they do. Dan, thank you so much, brother. We'll definitely do another one, and if y'all got anything else, we'll close her out.
Thank you very much, Kyle. Appreciate it. It's great spending some time with you.
First, thanks, Dan.
Thanks.